A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sen. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights are probably gone.
So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to episode 15 of British Invaders, the podcast where we talk all about British science fiction television. And today we are continuing our discussion of Robin of Sherwood. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. When we left you in the last episode, we just reached the end of series 2 of Robin of Sherwood. And so in 1986, the third series returned, with obviously the immediate problem and the cliffhanger had been left at the end of series 2, that the first Robin, Robin of Loxley, had died. There seemed to be no character to play the role of Robin Hood. So when the third series starts, we find that the Outlaws have split up and have gone their separate ways. Marion has been given a pardon by the king and has returned to her more sort of like noble and high-born life in court. And we're also introduced to a new character who was Robert of Huntingdon, who was played by the actor Jason Connery, who, of course, is Sean Connery's son. And we learnt in the first episode that, in fact, it had been Robert of Huntingdon who had been called by Hearn at the end of the second series to take on the role as the Hooded Man, to rescue the outlaws, confront the sheriff and Guy of Gisborne, and to memorialise the death of Robin of Loxley with the flaming arrow fired into the lake.
It was the introduction of quite a different character. It was clear from the beginning that Robert of Huntingdon was going to be our new Robin Hood. Robin of Loxley had been a peasant who was persecuted through his life, and Robert of Huntingdon was a noble, and Robert of Huntingdon did not respond to Hearn's call in the same way that Robin of Loxley did. Robert was initially called, as we find out, to be the Hooded Man who rescued the outlaws, and who we see mysteriously show up at the end of the second series. We see the moments following that memorial of shooting the flaming arrow into the lake. We see those following moments where Robert basically says to Hearn, "Okay, I rescued them. I'm done. I'm going back to my life." That's that.
He doesn't want to take on the role. He's rescued them because he thought it was the right thing to do. But as you say, he wants to go back to his old life, and initially he rejects Hearn's call.
At which point there is a one-year period where all the characters go off in their different ways. Little John goes back to being a shepherd, and Much joins him and does that. Marion is given a pardon that we are led to believe is bought by her father. She goes back to her life, and the others go back to doing their own various things, and we see bits of those here and there. It is only at the end of this one-year period where Robert sees Marion and starts to fall for Marion. This starts the chain of events that brings him to heed Hearn's call and to reunite the outlaws to become the new Robin Hood.
So as Robert of Huntingdon slowly realizes he's going to have to take on the role of Robin Hood, and circumstances sort of drive him along, he has to meet and persuade all the original outlaws to join him. And to do so, he seems to have to fight just about all of them along the way. So we get him traveling around the country, basically putting the gang of merry men back together again, persuading Friar Tuck and Little John and Will Scarlet to join him, which, of course, he does by the end of the second episode in the third series.
It seemed like we had nearly an hour of television of Robert fighting the people that we know will be his own men, which was kind of amusing and fairly well done.
It certainly was very clever, I thought, the way the creators used different elements of the Robin Hood legend to introduce a new character, to sort of pass the title of Robin Hood to another man. And certainly when we go back and look at the various myths and ballads around Robin Hood, the two names that crop up are Loxley and Huntingdon, as two places often associated with the character.
Something that I enjoyed was the fact that the new Robin, and Robert of Huntingdon, of course, does start calling himself Robin, is not a drop-in replacement for the original Robin. it is never quite the same with him and the others, in particular with Marion. Marion married Robin of Locksley at the very beginning of the series. It took her a long time to recover and to go back, even to be with the Outlaws. Robert, or the new Robin, was always interested in Marion, but she was still too close to what had happened before to have a relationship with him, until quite near the end of the series, where that relationship is forged.
Yes, it takes most of the third series for her to come to accept him in a way, or certainly to accept his romantic interest in her.
The difference between Robin and the rest of the Outlaws, with Robin being a nobleman and the rest of the Outlaws being peasants, is something that never disappears. It's always there. And they didn't quite accept him until near the end of that series as well. It was a series of transition from him being an outsider to him being not only the leader, but an insider within that group.
It's a different incarnation of Robin Hood. And as I say, well, the creators of the show made it almost like a legacy character. It's almost like, we could say, it's like the Doctor regenerating in Doctor Who. He becomes a different character. He's played in a different way. It was a very clever way of dealing with the change of actors.
Yes, I consider the transition from Michael Praed as Robin of Locksley to Jason Connery as Robert of Huntingdon or Robin Hood to be a classic moment among British science fiction and fantasy television. It was very out there, and it was something that really worked quite well. Robin of Sherwood was created by Richard Carpenter, or Kip Carpenter, as he was sometimes called. And he was a writer who decided that he wanted to take this legend of Robin Hood and all these legends that related to it and construct something new. That was how he approached it, and that was the beginning of the process of making this new series.
One of the shows that Kip Carpenter had done before Robin Hood, quite a while before actually, was a 1970s children's television series called Cat Weasel, which I remember fondly. Cat Weasel was a magician from Norman times who was magically thrown forward in time and deals with all sorts of anachronistic problems living in the early 1970s. It was quite an amusing show, but it also featured obviously magic and fantasy, which was clearly an interest of Kip Carpenter's. The series, Robin of Sherwood, was directed by Ian Sharp, who certainly he did the direction for the first two series. And he'd been an actor himself, who then turned director and directed various British TV shows such as The Professionals and Minder. And I think he did a very good job in the first two series. He's particularly good, as we've said, at some of the interesting and stylized cinematography, but also at the action sequences. He was very good at directing action sequences.
Yes, I think he started that visual style and the style of action that was used. That was something that was carried through the series after he was no longer involved. They also started this series with the idea that Robin Hood and all of the other outlaws should be very young.
Yeah, so as we've said, the cast were very young, and it is a very sort of like idealistic portrayal of the band of outlaws. But there's also, because they are so young, we get to see plenty of sort of quite fun romping in the forest with them playing various games, some of which seem to be training for their sort of guerrilla activities, but some of them just seems to be playing fun and horseplay, which is quite entertaining.
Robin Hood had not had a major presence on British television for quite some time. When they were talking about making this Robin Hood series, the things they were looking back at were the Robin Hood TV series with Richard Green from 1955 to 1960, and looking back even further to Errol Flynn in 1938, then Douglas Fairbanks in 1922. There had been the odd low-profile show or the odd movie that showed up here or there, but there was no major Robin Hood that people talked about and was a landmark for many years. And this was part of the reason that they wanted to do this.
I think, as you say, probably the most famous one beforehand was the 1950s Richard Green TV series with the very famous theme tune that everybody can remember. Although, interestingly, a few years before that one broadcast, there was a live BBC TV production of Robin Hood, which actually starred Patrick Troughton as Robin Hood, who, of course, would later become famous, particularly amongst British Invaders fans, for playing the second incarnation of the Doctor in Doctor Who.
Yes, that was in the early 50s that Patrick Troughton played the role. And unfortunately, there is not much footage of that series that still exists, although I believe there is still a little bit.
There's a few clips on YouTube that you can see, and it does have the problem that it was live, so it's there with fluffs and coughs and sneezes and everything.
Robin of Sherwood was a joint production between HTV and Goldcrest, HTV being a more television-oriented company and Goldcrest being more of a film company. I think this was part of the reason that they worked with 16mm film, and they did it in a very film production style way, doing a great deal of location shooting and so on. They would film each series one summer and basically complete it, and then it would be aired the following spring. So you had the actual copyright dates for them are 83, 84, and 85 for the three series, but they were broadcast in 84, 85, and 86. So I think in many ways, each series was produced much like a film would be produced, more than most TV series were done at that time.
The Goldcrest production company, that they were riding high at the time, because I think that was not too long after they'd won all the Oscars for their film Chariots of Fire in the early 80s, which was a very well-known film. So I think they were pretty flush and riding high in success at the time that they took on this production.
They had additionally had success from the film Gandhi.
Unfortunately, their success didn't continue, and they had a few flops, notably a film called Revolution. I think it was quite a famous period in British film production because the failure of Goldcrest, of course, led to the end of Robin of Sherwood, because there had always been planned the fourth series. Unfortunately, the money ran out and it never happened. Some of the plot elements that were introduced in the third series with Robert of Huntingdon as Robin Hood, we never got to learn the outcome.
At the end of that third series, while they had written Marion of Leiford out of the series because the actress Judy Trott had said that she did not want to return for a fourth series, aside from that, everything was as it was, and you would expect it to continue. It was not until after it was completed that it was realized that Goldcrest was not taking on projects like this anymore, and it was simply too big for HTV to do it on its own.
And with Marion leaving at the end of the third series, we thought that they could cope with that and introduce a new character, because, of course, they'd already had to do that at the end of the second series with the first Robin departing.
That was also an interesting thing that happened, because at the end of the second series, they had something like 1 week before they were wrapping up filming, and Michael Praed announced that he was not going to be in the third series, which was a big surprise to everyone on the production team. Michael Praed had, in fact, had the opportunity to star in The Three Musketeers on Broadway, which he very much wanted to do, and years later was very pleased that he had done, even though that show flopped. The production team was left with no star. They brought Kip Carpenter, the writer, out as soon as they could and said, "Look, what are we going to do?" Carpenter said to them, "Well, I have it figured out. We can introduce a new Robin. And what are we going to do with the old one? Well, we'll give him a glorious death. A glorious self-sacrifice, in fact." And it was because of this sequence of things that happened that you had one of the most interesting parts of Robin of Sherwood taking place.
It's fantastic that they produced the episode at the end of the second series, The Greatest Enemy, under such circumstances. Because, I mean, they obviously were under a lot of pressure, and yet they produced this extremely memorable bit of British television. Remarkable work.
Who's this?
Robert of Huntingdon.
What's he want with us?
Your help.
Didn't I say?
It's Marion. She's been captured by Lord Owen of Clun.
Has she?
John, you must listen.
You're wasting your time. We're shepherds now.
I saved you from the sheriff.
It's true, John.
So you were the hooded man, were you?
I was.
Then why didn't you join us?
He's the son of the Earl of Huntingdon.
Is he? Is he? Then why don't you get his father to rescue Marion?
Listen.
You're all the same, aren't you? We saved Marion's father once. Did he join us? No. He bought his way back into favour with King John.
The story of Robin Hood, of course, goes back centuries to all sorts of bits of myth and legend and cropping up in various works. From our looking this up, we found that the first written version of the Robin Hood story that survives is a piece of text called Robin Hood and the Monk, which is still exists in Cambridge University, not too far from where I'm sitting now. And that was written in 1450, but that probably wasn't the first appearance of Robin Hood.
That's right. There were these original ballads, as they were called, that started around 1450 or so. If you look at the text of them, they're quite difficult to read because they're in a much earlier form of English. In fact, there are references to the character of Robin Hood going back much earlier to about 1228. Those references are to something that we don't know about. The original versions that were either oral or have been completely lost are things we simply don't know about. So we often refer back to these original things from the 1400s, where there are earlier things that must have been there. So there is a long, complex set of tales and variations of Robin Hood that go back many centuries.
There was also, I think when we get later on, we get a very popular version of Robin Hood cropping up in a very famous book, Ivanhoe, by Sir Walter Scott, which was published in 1819. And the Robin Hood that appears in that novel is very much, I think he's very recognizable now as our sort of modern interpretation of all the myths and legends, in that he is the character who protects the poor and steals from the rich. The book is very much about the conflict that was going on between the Normans and the Saxons in England at that time. Robin Hood, or Robin of Locksley, as he appears in the book, is certainly on the side of the Saxons and on the side of the poor and the dispossessed. And it was a very romantic portrayal of Robin Hood that became extremely popular in England following Scott's novel.
Jumping back to Robin of Sherwood, one thing that they did very well was taking these various things that had been written from the ballads and from many other sources and incorporating many different versions. For example, in some versions, the versions we're most familiar with now, you had a character called Will Scarlet. Well, in some other early versions, he was actually referred to as Will Scatlock. Well, in Robin of Sherwood, they used both. They said that he was initially Will Scatlock and added this story about the death of his wife and so on, and him moving on and changing his name to Will Scarlet because he was scarlet and red with anger. You also had these two different legends of who the character of Robin was. You had the idea of him being a peasant and a woodsman who was Robin of Locksley. This was the version that they initially used. And there was also this other idea of Robin Hood being the son of the Earl of Huntingdon. They incorporated both versions. Another thing that they used was this idea of Adam Bell. Adam Bell was really another name for Robin Hood, who showed up in some very similar legends, and I believe in writing around the same time. They did an episode of Robin of Sherwood called Adam Bell, where they had another character, Adam Bell, who was essentially the Robin Hood of the previous generation, and he comes back as this older outlaw, and there is some conflict in the third series between the Robert of Huntingdon Robin Hood and Adam Bell. There were many pieces of many different legends that were incorporated into this series, and many additional pieces that were new legends that were written for the series but had the feel of legend very much.
It's very enjoyable when Adam Bell turns up. As you say, it's Robin Hood encountering his older self. And that's reflected back because Adam Bell also says it when he meets Robin Hood, it's like meeting himself much younger. It's quite an interesting meeting of the legends, which, as you say, are probably facets of the same character.
One of the things that they used in Robin of Sherwood that brought an interesting style to things and an interesting approach was the use of repetition. Repetition was very important to Robin of Sherwood. We already mentioned this idea of the memorial by shooting arrows into the water that appeared in the opening pilot in the second episode, and then appeared again after the death of Robin of Locksley. That was a very strong repetition of the beginning and then either an ending or a new beginning. We don't know at that point. There are many phrases that are used and are mentioned. Never parting is one. The idea of the hooded man. Also the music. There are many pieces of it that are used in a repeated way. And this is something that I think plays to its favor, where it might in some cases be a weakness. I like the way that that idea of repeated ideas and coming back to the same thing and being in the same place again was something that was very important to the idea of the series and important to the Outlaws themselves.
Another phrase that gets repeated throughout the show, the quite famous phrase, is nothing is forgotten, nothing is ever forgotten, which crops up several times in the series. And actually, one of the things that Robert of Huntingdon will say to Marian in the third series that will make her believe that he has become the new version of Robin Hood. And I think it's an appropriate phrase. I know it's popular with fandom because they can look back on this series and it isn't forgotten. It carries on. I don't think it's dated in any way, actually. I think it still stands up very well 20 years later.
It does stand up well. It certainly does.
The DVDs are available for Robin of Sherwood in the UK and Europe in Region 2. They're available as individual DVDs for all the three series or as a box set where you can get all 26 episodes, which comes in quite reasonably at just under £40.
There are also Region 1 DVDs available. The recent set that came out in the past year or so has two sets. There is Set 1, which has the first two seasons, and Set 2 has the third season. There is an extra disc containing extra features for each set. And those DVDs were done quite well, and they aren't all that expensive.
Hi, we're Mike and Andrew from Futility Radio, and we're here to tell you all about Cadmium 2, our new podcast based around British cult TV, film and radio. Andrew, what sort of shows can they expect us to talk about?
Well, there's Horny Housewives, Backdoor Bangers 2, Squealing Amateurs...
Hang on. I'm talking about our new podcast. What are you talking about?
Our new podcast? These are some of the shows we'll be covering.
Oh, for God's sake. It's about cult television? Cult with an L.
Oh, sorry. I thought we meant cult.
No.
So we don't want these DVDs then?
No. We'll be looking at cult movies, TV shows and radio shows that all originated here in the UK.
That's right. The UK has decades of broadcasting history under its belt and has produced some of the world's most recognised entertainment. And yet there doesn't seem to be many podcasts out there celebrating that fact.
Correct. So we've decided to redress the balance, and Cadmium 2's mission is to big up that history. We'll be covering all manner of shows, from Doctor Who to Danger Mouse, Journey into Space to Nebulous. So, together with Paul, our co-host, we'll be introducing you to an eclectic world of the vastly popular and the wildly misunderstood UK entertainment. So, there you have it. Sip your tea, doff your bowler, and tune in to your wireless for Cadmium 2, Entertainment from the Empire. The very best of British.
So we're not going to need these DVDs then.
Oh, right. Pass me the Squealing Amateurs disc.
As for our recommendation of Robin of Sherwood, I will say this was a really fun series. It had, at times, some great episodes that were very solid historical fantasy drama with bits of adventure and horror and all sorts of things. It was quite well done. At its weakest, it was a touch cheesy but good fun adventure fare. It's not that hard to get a hold of. It's worth taking a look.
certainly if you're a fantasy fan or a sword and sorcery fan, then this is a version of Robin Hood that you should check out. And if you're used to more traditional science fiction television, I think it's still worth having a look at. It's terrific entertainment, good television, and the cast all very attractive young men and women, which is a bonus.
Yes, if you are looking for a version of Robin Hood to be your version of Robin Hood, this is worth checking out. In summary, Robin of Sherwood, or Robin Hood as it was known in the US, was a classic Robin Hood series that had the twist of a fantasy edge involving Herne the Hunter, who summoned Robin Hood to the cause, and it had all of the characters that we're used to in Robin Hood, like the Sheriff of Nottingham and Marian and Little John and so on, and it also had some great new characters like Nazir and Much and the Abbot Hugo and Herne himself. It had a great historical feel to it, and it was a really fun adventure series based on the Robin Hood mythos and other bits of myth here and there.
As Brian says, it's fantastic characters, wonderful sets, a very interesting look and feel to the show, and I think it is worth having a look at if you've not seen it before.
I think this brings us to the end of our discussion of Robin of Sherwood. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com and at www.BritishInvaders.com. Our next episode of British Invaders will be about The Day of the Triffids, the 1981 BBC miniseries of the great John Wyndham novel. So thank you for listening to us talk about this great stuff, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
And this is Eamon from England saying goodbye.